Welcome to the weekly. I'm Jeremy.
Yeah, I'm Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Hello.
So Chris is unavailable this week, and Matt was kind enough to step in as co-host. So this week on the weekly, on the Otter Side RPG, Dungeon Dwellers by Reaper Minis, so an RPG by Reaper, Pathfinder Revolution, and YouTube's new AI policy. Mm. Yeah, so you see an example of rejected AI art behind us. This is another Wizards of the Coast blunder. So a quick update and kind of a milestone in Brinkwatch 2023.
Oh.
It's day 300. So it's been 300 days since Kyle Brink said that cis-het white men should step away from the hobby. But obviously he didn't mean step away from the management and the getting the paychecks and all that from the hobby. Just playing the games, I suppose. But it makes sense that if you want the hobby to be more inclusive, then the management should be more inclusive. So Kyle, resign. So we'll see if this continues into 2024 and if we get our Christmas wish.
Stop the bleeding, Kyle. Stop the bleeding.
Yes. All right. So let's start with a Kickstarter that Pizza Games is doing a Neil Gaiman-inspired kind of dark fantasy tabletop called On the Otter Side. So kind of based on or inspired by the Neverwhere novel by Neil Gaiman and using Mark of the Odd, so the Into the Odd system by Chris McDowell. So it's going to be it's an Italian studio and it's going to be digital only. So it's a very their stretch goal, I think, was only or their goal was only like $500 or something, because they're just producing PDFs. And it looks like most of the layout and design is already set. And it's a very like Victorian scrapbook, you know, looking. It's got a really nice aesthetic to it. So the setting is a realm filled with bizarre horrors and a Victorian aesthetic. So you're on the Otter Side and taking place in the city of Carcosa. And it has many, many other names. But the shadow side of the city is what you're looking for. And the familiar grows stranger. And there's mysterious and ancient, intricate realms like ancient fairy tales is basically the aesthetic they're going for in a Victorian kind of look. So survive or find your way back home is basically the gameplay, the motivation. So inspired by Gaiman also more specifically had a novel called On the Otter Side where they took the name from, and they also draw inspiration from Ray Bradbury's Something Wicked This Way Come and Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. So what they're trying to do is design a game that works for both like OSR and more narrative driven, you know, somewhere between fans of OSR and narrative driven games. So, you know, rules light, but also very story rich. So the campaign ends December 5th. So they're already 300% over. So they had a very, very modest goal. And so they'll be producing a package of three books. There'll be 48-page PDFs. So this is all digital. So the books are 48-page PDFs. The Book of Souls will be the rules for character creation and gameplay. The Book of Bones is the setting and atmosphere, so 48 pages of that. And then the Book of Madness is tables and prompts for quickly generating adventures. And so because they've succeeded, their stretch goals are now including a Book of Flesh, which is which was just unlocked, and that's prompts for even more adventures. So additional prompts for the strange side of the city, and another goal will expand it with the Encyclopedia Rerum Innobilium, which is it introduces the darkest mysteries of the city. So and the campaign, if you even support it with just a single euro, you'll get their PDF of Oddities, which is 30 eerie prompts that would work with any horror game. So they're giving you something for free. And the campaign itself is bilingual, so it looks like they're doing both English and Italian. And the translation looks decent. I didn't go through anything other than the page, but the English wasn't crazy. So hopefully it's you know, they had a native reader or native editor kind of give it a run through. So it's the Mark of the Odd system, and it emphasizes problem solving, creativity. So characters have hit points and then three primary attributes, and then everything is resolved with D20s. So yeah, some perilous combat and D20s, just like Into the Odd. So yeah, so take a look at that. I think it's nice. It's nice that they just said, yeah, we're this is maybe the first time we're doing this. Let's go digital. Let's, you know, because you can always go back and do a printed book if you build a fan base, if you build a player base. So I think it's nice that they're doing this. And because it's an Italian studio, the visual aesthetics are wonderful. You know, it's very, very richly designed and laid out. So check out, I'll put a link in the description, and Pizza Games on the Otter Side.
Does it, when you first started describing it, I immediately thought of Vassin, you know, Victorian and horror. But then you said Carcosa, that makes me think King of Yellow, which makes me think Cthulhu.
Right. Yeah, they do talk about it. Do talk about it being, it can lean into the Lovecraftian. Yeah, definitely.
Does it seem like it has like a fleshed out lore, or is it really old school where they're relying on tables and improvisation? And stuff
I think it might be more, from what it looks like, it might be improvisation, because they're really, you know, vague about the setting. Like, they name Carcosa as the setting, but the city has many names, and, you know, so you're not sure. So things just get weird. So I think it's just you're taking inspiration from, you know, from Victorian, you know, ghost stories and fairy tales, and a little bit of Lovecraftian horror. But it's interesting. I really like the aesthetic. Is just like, you know, old photograph and layered, like handwritten letters and just like, you know, layers and layers of paper. So it has that nice feel of like trying to uncover, like, you know, if it is a mystery in your storytelling, or, you know, narrative in a mystery, it works really well with their aesthetic. So oddly, I'm in endorsing a digital only RPG. I would love to see this in print, but I would think it would be pretty expensive to get it to the scale that they've done the production to actually print this would be pretty expensive. And so once they find players, then I think that would be their next move. So another RPG that I think this is like the last day. We're like the last day or two of this campaign. And it was really, really surprised me. And one of the patrons recommended I take a look at this. Dungeon Dwellers role-play game, so DDRPG, is Reaper Miniatures tabletop role-playing game. So they're basically doing a D20 classic. It's not OSR, and it's not modern, you know, 5e. It's this kind of what they're calling a bridge between the best of both worlds, which sometimes doesn't work out, but they're trying to do a very general kind of, you know, D20 that they're calling in the FAQ a love letter to, you know, the classic role play from their childhood. So, and it makes sense. They make miniatures, so it makes sense if they have their own system and kind of, you know, taking advantage of Wizards of the Coast stumbles with, D&D 5e as they step into their anniversary. So, basically you're playing adventurers of seeking fortune and glory in a perilous world. So, and they're encouraging active participants, active participation instead of passive observing. And then, of course, the foundation of the system is group dynamics, fostering cooperation and collaboration. So, and there it's 3 to 6 players with a, including a game master. And basically what they're giving you is very familiar, very recognizable. So there's 4 core classes in this initial release. So fighter, cleric, rogue, and wizard. And then 4 core folk fantasy races. So human, Proudfoot halfling, wood elf, hill dwarf. And that's it, the 4. And then, of course, the six ability scores. So strength, constitution, dexterity, intelligence, wisdom, charisma. So very recognizable, easy to come from other systems or OSR. And then, D20 resolution and your, D20 with modifiers. And so right now there's no feats in the system. They say they may add something like that, but it has an open skill system, you know, just based on ability checks right now. And their spell system, they said they've improved. They've made improvements in magic. So improvement over which system, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But we'll see. And it's dangerous because when you hit 0, that's it. You can be stabilized, but there are no death saves. So if you're not stabilized, you pass away. Yes. So this campaign is going to give us three books, a player's guide, 128-page player's guide. Mm-hmm. And there's also a fortune point system that they talk about. So, you know, basically like inspiration, mm-hmm. I think it sounds like. So it can be a reward for participation, role play, heroism, sportsmanship, and, you know, it gives you some advantage or benefit. So the Player's Guide, the Game Master's Vault, another 128-page, and both of these have Wayne Reynolds covers. So that's, I like when companies do that. They go out and they get a talented artist and they get original art and they have now an identity to this game. You know, they have a nice look. I mean, it's going to look like Pathfinder, but it's nice that they get some talented artists working on games, because that, you know, that shows that they're at least spending some money on this. It's not just a half-assed, you know, promotion to sell minis or something. And then their monster.
You mean like the art around you right now?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And the last is their monster manual called Denizens of the Dungeon. So their definitive book of monsters. And they have things like the Axoloti and the Fingrach. So the Fimengrach is a beholder, but, you know, of course you can't use the word beholder. And the Arachno Assassin. So I think a lot of things will feel very familiar and they'll have different names, but they'll have beautiful art. Yeah, so they have a lot of, and they name all of their interior artists for all of the books. And yeah, it was nice to see some new Wayne Reynolds art specific for this. Mm. And the cartography in the book itself, they hired the Forge Studios to specifically do the map making. So they have nice looking maps. And they're going to do PDFs, physical hard copies, and then also a collector's set, probably with a slip case. So the collector's version, just for that extra little oomph. And then, of course, what Reaper Miniatures campaign would be complete without miniatures? Mm-hmm. So, if you're not really interested in the game, they did new miniatures, new sculpts for this game. So you can do a miniatures-only pledge. So for $50, you get everything, all the miniatures that they're going to produce for the game. PDF only is $49. So digital is $49. Print edition is $79 and collector's box is $99. So it's not really breaking the bank. Usually, yeah, the books end up being closer to, you know, $60. You're $150 or $200 with a set of books usually. So pretty reasonable. And they're also, Reaper also has their own paints. So you can buy a set of the Reaper core color paints. And of course, there's a t-shirt. And then you can also pledge at extra minis. Yeah, so there's individual minis can be duplicated. So the miniatures are for the monsters, goblins, skeletons, wraiths, ogres, the Fimgrench, which is the beholder, a moor troll, ticks, lesser basilisk, cultists, oozes, and of course, a dragon. And then they do the four iconic adventurers. So one of each class and one class and folk combination for each of them produced, yeah, specifically for the game. And so they're good looking, you know, Reaper miniatures. And yeah, so I'm curious. I didn't get a chance to look deeper into the rules, but this is an interesting move. I guess they're trying to take advantage. You know, they basically said on their webpage, we know Paizo, you know, the Pathfinder and 5e have a lot of people producing content for it. So they wanted to go somewhere in between. They didn't want to go as OSR. They didn't want to do, you know, 5e compatible. So what do you think? What do you think about Reaper?
I have mixed feelings right now. Mm-hmm. I like Reaper. Mm-hmm. Like every time I hear something about Reaper, I'm like, yeah, you're still alive. All right.
Yeah, right.
Whenever I hear, I've heard this before, we're bridging the gap between OSR and modern D&D. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what does that mean? Mm. Because what you just described, other than that fortune point thing you referenced, mm-hmm. It just sounded like OSR stuff to me. Like, it didn't sound, you know, they're not adding skills. I guess you said they said maybe they'll add feats later. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you take those out and there's a high death probability, it just sounds like OSR to me.
Mm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I don't understand the strategic choice to do this. Like, mm-hmm. I, what niche are they hoping to carve out here? Because it just, It sounds like another Dungeons and Dragons OSR kind of spin-off game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much room there is for that right now. Yeah. And I think evidenced by, I'm looking at their Kickstarter, and they have 43 hours left, $146,000 pledged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that little Knave book that didn't have anything with it cleared like $600,000.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and this has got minis and add-ons, and it's a known company.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's room for this to thrive, to be honest. I mean, if it does, great. And I'm curious, might get the PDF down the line to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But I don't know if there's room for this in that niche. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I wonder. And I guess it's, you know, it's something that they can offer, you know, along with their miniatures. If you're going to Reaper for your D&D minis, then maybe you could be tempted. And they also had like advice to kind of, you know, how do I get my players to try this was one of their, you know, FAQ questions. And so that was interesting. You know, just basically talking about this is familiar, this is recognizable, it's easy, but it's not rules light. And yeah, it's interesting. They spent some money, you know, hiring the artists and producing these books. So I wonder, yeah, what exactly, maybe they're just, you know, hoping for a splinter in the market, or if everything gets locked behind some, you know, WotC, you know, digital walled garden, that hopefully people will be looking for some physical books and some, you know, something with an aesthetic that doesn't require registering and subscriptions and everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, okay, I'm biased, right? If you make me a Dungeons and Dragons like game that's not Dungeons and Dragons, I'm probably already ranking it ahead of the current state of D&D.
Right? Yeah, so, that's true.
I feel like at this point you could almost run like an experimental campaign where you have your group make characters, and every adventure you try a different D&D clone. You know, all right, yeah. Guys, this time we're doing it in DCC, and next week we'll do Knave, and after that we'll do Beckme, or you know, we'll just keep going.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. I wonder what we're going to be in for next year, if we're going to see a splintering, if we're going to see like D&D just become its own thing and not even like try to include themselves in the tabletop hobby anymore. They're going to be this completely, it's going to be a service and a lifestyle and everything, you know, you're going to have to step away.
I think they're almost there. Like that's exactly, I think we've kind of touched on this before. That's what Games Workshop is, right? Mm-hmm. There's Games Workshop, and then there's the rest. There's the miniature gaming community, right? They're two separate things, yeah. Even though to an outsider, they wouldn't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing that with D&D too. I'm seeing it on Threads, right? Mm-hmm. In the Threads kind of TTRPG community, a lot of these folks will refer to Dungeons and Dragons and TTRPGs. And I'm like, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Wow.
That's kind of like when I was a kid, like my mom was a Catholic, right? Mm-hmm. And kids would tell me like, oh, you're a Catholic, I'm a Christian. And I'm like, wait a minute. It's the same thing.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Well, they'll have their Vatican soon, I'm sure. Yeah.
What's it? Yeah.
Construct day, yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, I might get the PDF, and I hope they can make something of it. Mm-hmm. The Kickstarter numbers don't really blow me away.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult timing, too. Like, you know, right before the holidays, I don't think people are jumping on, you know, they already know they've got a lot of purchases ahead of them. So pledging crowdfunding probably isn't something they're looking to do, especially because they know that they're not going to see it for at least a year, you know. Yeah, so yeah, it's interesting. I hope they find an audience for it, and I hope it. And especially if, you know, if they add rules and then add minis and stuff, I think they've got some good, you know, synergy within the company with what they're doing. They're producing their own dice. You know, they've got a T-shirt. I mean, but yeah,
they have a beer cozy.
They should. They will. I'm sure. But speaking of another old company that every time I see them, I'm like, I feel the same as you. I'm like, oh, I'm glad they're still around. Steve Jackson Games. So they had an unsuccessful crowdfunding campaign for a Pathfinder-themed version of Revolution. So Revolution was the 2009 board game. The 2009 board game. And so they licensed from Paizo that setting, the Galorian setting, but it failed to get enough funding. But they said, fuck it. Maybe they did so much production. They're like, we can just, you know, we can put this out. And, you know, we have the, think there's going to be enough interest, you know, Pathfinder's a popular enough setting. So we are going to see Pathfinder Revolution. So Pathfinder Revolution. So Viva la Revolución Corvosa. So the city of Corvosa is the setting. And the original Revolution was designed by Philip DuBarry, who I think his most famous game is the World War II Black Orchestra, the famous board game. And so basically the original rules for Revolution and the interaction remain pretty much untouched. It's just kind of the setting that they're theming it with Pathfinder. So it's for 3 to 6 players, and you're vying for control over the factions in the city of Corvosa. And Corvosa is the gateway to the region of Varicia. So if you know your lore, your Pathfinder lore, then your Galarian lore and geography, that will mean something. And this area was introduced in Curse of the Crimson Throne in Pathfinder, that adventure path. And so scenes of hidden war, using blackmail, bribery, statecraft, and when necessary, threatening shows of force. So yeah, the city's full of many factions, the scholars, the artisans, and you're just trying to get do your way with, and it's basically like you're bidding secretly, bluffing in the game to try to accrue the most victory points for control of the city. So yeah, so if you played Revolution and you like the Pathfinder setting, this might be a nice combination.
That might trick me into buying it. Revolution was like, you know, Steve Jackson Games has had obviously hits with Munchkin and Illuminati and GURPS. But if you just go with like a regular tabletop board game, Revolution was the only one that they made that really hit it. It's very highly regarded. Mm. So, yeah, that one I might actually take a look at. Mm. I hope... knock on particle board. I hope they give it a good quality production.
Yeah.
No offense. Steve Jackson cuts a lot of corners. Mm-hmm. You know, they like their black and white print. And
yeah.
Their what is it, like 2-column real generic layouts. And,
right. And
it would be nice if they zhuzh this one up, you know, especially since it's Pathfinder.
Yeah, if they've got good art assets and stuff, hopefully, yeah, they will. And maybe if Paizo has some sort of approval, you know, maybe they'll say, can we have a little more color, please? How about some gloss? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, because with crowdfunding, I think the bar has been raised on production quality for board games. So if you're investing in it, that was my huge disappointment with HeroQuest, with the revival of HeroQuest. It was such a Hasbro garbage production, like the quality of everything, all the warped minis and the one-sided printed tiles and stuff. Yeah, with the very thin cardstock. That was very, something you would buy at Walmart, basically, is what they did, what they were making.
Yeah.
So that's too bad. But and the other thing that might compel you is Pathfinder Revolution folds into this game the two original expansions for Revolution. So the 5th and 6th player expansions are in there as well as all the mechanics and everything that the board has a flip side to it to enable you to play up to 6 players. And this should be at retail already. They announced it's reaching retail November 13th, so a couple days ago.
Really?
And so check out the Warehouse 23. Their online store will definitely have it, as well as they also deal with Amazon and a lot of the big retailers, online retailers. But Pathfinder Revolution. And yeah, and they just and more Paizo or Pathfinder related news. They Paizo just announced that their revised, like, OGL free version of Pathfinder Second Edition, the Player's Book, was just released on their store. So Pathfinder's moving on, moving away from the OGL, and I guess next year Starfinder is going to get a second edition as well. So yeah, I think Paizo is going to take advantage of the mixed messages and the confusing promotion or confusing marketing from Wizards to get a little more market share there. They'll never get back to that fourth edition era where they basically split it with Wizards of the Coast, but they'll try.
Okay, I'm looking at the box art, and the box art is really nice.
Oh, cool.
So I'd like to see the internals, but the box art certainly looks nice.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, I might have to pick that up, because I play a lot of board games with my local group. Mm-hmm. That one's all the original Revolution is I've never played it, but it's really highly regarded. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to check that out.
Yeah. Yeah, so Steve Jackson Games. So it's interesting that they decided, okay, failed campaign, but we're not going to rely on that. We know that there's enough interest to make this a thing. And maybe they already paid Paizo the money. So, like, we gotta recoup some of that license we bought. All right. And lastly, I guess this is we're ending with the humanity's war against the machines. And we're in a room that basically exemplifies that. So this is an AI-generated paneled living room with a television and, like, video game controllers and stuff on the carpeting that was obviously generated by AI. And I think it was just a social media promotion that Wizards was doing for the secret lair drop, whatever they're called, of the Tomb Raider set that they're going to do for Magic the Gathering. And I don't know why companies continue to do this. They think that people are idiots online and they don't do reverse image lookups and they don't have all kinds of ways that they analyze everything. So they'll just throw an image up there and probably didn't want to spend any money on it. And then immediately people are saying, that's AI. You're using AI in your D&D books. Now you're using AI in your promotion for, you know, for your Magic the Gathering. Please don't do this. And immediately Wizards said, oh, it wasn't us. It wasn't us. It was that damn artist. Can't believe that shameful person. But we're getting another. So this is YouTube in this case. YouTube has now required creators to flag all of their AI generated content. So they'll add new ways to do request removals of deepfakes, including music videos that mimic the artist's voice. So that's something that's interesting. I think they've always been much more receptive to music rights and the recording industry, maybe because they suffered from, like, MP3s and torrenting. They sort of suffered the biggest damage when YouTube was, like, first a thing. So they have a lot of, you know, content ID and stuff that is always checking for unlicensed music. So there have new policies that require creators to indicate if they've uploaded AI generated content. So, they will adopt ways that will request the content if it simulates an identifiable individual, or this is in quotes from their wording, or mimics an artist's unique singing or rapping voice. Or their rapping voice. I love that terminology. And so YouTube will introduce updates that will inform viewers when the content they're seeing is synthetic. So if it's created altered or synthetic content that looks realistic but was made using AI tools. So creators creators that consistently choose to not disclose this information may be subject to content removal and suspension from the partner program, as well as other penalties. So that's what Julie Flannery O'Connor and Emily Moxley, the VPs of product management at YouTube, wrote. So the two areas where this will happen is in the description panel. It'll say altered or synthetic, and in the video player, kind of in that area where they put the warning for, like, you know, COVID-19 and political issues, the sensitive topics area, they'll also inform you of this is AI generated. So they're saying that is especially important in cases where the content discusses sensitive topics, such as elections. Yeah, that's what that section is. So anything talking about politics. So you'll also be able to request removal of AI-generated work. So yet another layer of harassment for people uploading content. You know, you can get false claims for people saying that's AI. So I can't wait. I can't wait. This background is definitely AI. So we're getting a content complaint already. So they said, as part of this process, not all content will be removed from YouTube. We'll consider a variety of factors when evaluating these requests, both of the VPs said, in which case there may be a higher bar, depending on if it's a public official, like if it has a political bent or if it's, you know, disparaging someone, they may rate it differently. So they're, it's up to YouTube. YouTube gets to decide everything, and it's going to be their... up to them what standard to meet. So the one person that I hope this has no effect on, and I see now that he already labels his videos with a little watermark that says deep fake in the corner.
Oh yeah.
Charlie Hopkinson. Yeah, he does really good comedy. If you don't know his channel, he does really good comedy and insane impersonations of Lord of the Rings, you know, actors from Lord of the Rings and Star Wars. And they watch their own shows and criticize them in a little flat in England. And Qui-Gon eats biscuits. And there's really good comedy there. And so I hope this kind of change isn't going to affect his audience and his reach. I hope he still, you know, gets out there, because it's some of the funniest stuff on YouTube. The writing is so good, and he produces stuff at such an amazing rate and plays all the parts. He's basically like, you know, changing bathrobes and sitting in different, you know, different sofas in the in his apartment to generate all this content. Mm-hmm. So I hope
those are really funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really well done. So they will add, so they're adding the ability to request removal. And specifically about mimicking, even mimicking the voice. So if there's nothing visually that's being done, so they're considering factors whether the content is the subject of news reporting, analysis, or critique using the synthetic voices. So the last quote from O'Connor and Moxley, what a team. We're in the early stages of our work and will continue to evolve our approach as we learn more. Yeah, and the technology is evolving too. So eventually it's going to get so good that they're not going to have a clue what they're even, you know, looking at. So basically that will be another way to take down somebody that you want to troll or harass, is just claim that they're AI. So another approach.
You're not real.
Prove it. Prove you're real. Hold up today's newspaper.
Yeah. It's like those kind of pointless copyright strikes, right? It's going to be a whole nother way for people to suspend your monetization.
Yep. Yeah, just get in the way. And it's already so bad. The advertising and everything on YouTube is hurting. You know, the ads, they're having trouble providing enough ads for everybody that's a partner. So, yeah, it's just going to make it even worse to try to, generate any sort of income doing content for them. And you know, right now there's no alternative platforms. So, yeah, people are pretty much stuck. If they want to have the biggest reach, they're dealing with YouTube, their rules, their censorship, and now their AI takedowns. So that is going to do it for this week. So where can people find you, Matt?
Well, I'm on Threads and Instagram. It's at Hargald, HARRGALD. Right now I'm doing a little bit of ranting about the continuing Vampire the Masquerade drama.
Oh, uh-huh.
They're changing it again because someone's mad about the bleed mechanic now.
I see.
And, you know, some of the stuff that they've been in trouble for in the past, for like racism and things, I totally get. Mm-hmm. But this one is now because vampires bleed unwilling people sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yes, but I'm just like, you know, they're the bad guys, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, if you don't want to play a bad guy, don't play that game.
Right, right.
So, anyway, I'm sorry. Where can people find you?
Well, I'm ranting about, no, I'm drawing. I'm actually drawing my single panel gag cartoon. So go to Abuse Cartoons on YouTube and Twitch and watch me draw it every week. And I've been really lucky with the chocolate covered snacks, but I usually eat something from a Japanese convenience store and show you something that you may not ever be able to get a hold of, but is weirdly delicious most of the time. So yeah, Abuse Cartoons. And if you want to read that cartoon, you can go to gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And if you like what we're doing with the weekly, you can support us on Patreon. So patreon.com/upturntable and become a weakling. And it's a great way to send us tips and links for different sources for things you'd like us to discuss on the weekly. So yeah, every Thursday night, Friday, Asian time, we do a this kind of review topic roundup. And I tried something a little bit different. I'll do it maybe for a few more weeks and just to see. But I'm taking the podcast section of this out and uploading it again on YouTube for a shorter, because the overall live stream is pretty long. So after we end this section, we go and talk to the chat for another length of time. And that creates a pretty lengthy live stream. So I'll be uploading just the podcast section of it. And we'll see if that creates any more audience. And if not, we'll just keep it as a live stream. But I really appreciate everyone that supports us on the live stream itself. And so subscribe to the channel if you want to be notified when we go live. And you can also join specifically on YouTube. So if you prefer not to deal with Patreon, YouTube has a membership and it gets you access to the same content. The only thing that you won't get that is exclusive to Patreon is the RSS feed, which gives you audio of all of the things we do, like this live stream. So that goes live every weekend. So that's up for this week. So thanks again, Matt, for joining me. And we will be back again next week. Goodbye. Goodbye.